Awesome. Welcome everybody to the 27th of September, Barry Spallett Bifold User Group Call. I'm glad to have all of you here. First, I want to note the Linux Foundation antitrust policy as well as the Hyperledger Code of Conduct. So make sure that we're all interacting with each other and treating each other well. Feel free to add yourself to the attendees list. Anything, announcements or deployments and work updates that we'd like to speak to?
Why don't I chime in then here, James? So biometrics, I think we've got most of the kinks worked out of biometrics. It should be working pretty well, but feedback is welcome. Test it out and give us some feedback in Discord. But in general, you should be able to sign up for it, make it optional. We've changed the underlying mechanics so that it doesn't store the hash any longer in the keychain. What it'll do, unless you're using biometrics, then it'll be stored in the keychain with biometrics. And if you fall back to the PIN, then it just stores the salt because you can always derive the hash and then unlock the wallet with the hash. So that's the direction we're going. We may not have finished that last step, but most of that should be done and it should be working and testable. And I think we got rid of all the glitches that were causing Android to ask for multiple authentications with biometrics when it was turned on. So check it out. And the other thing I wanted to talk about is technical debt. I'm from the BC team. We recognize we've introduced a lot of technical debt because we moved fast and furious to get a lot of features implemented. And we're now talking amongst ourselves about going back and cleaning that up. And that would include improving the unit test coverage. So we've had to disable a couple because we've run into some challenges with mocking and we'd like to clean that up. And would like to go back and get some documentation in place because we recognize a few people chime in on Discord. Like, how do I set this up and how do we get it going? And it can be a little bit complicated, especially if you want to override some of the screens. We'd like to also introduce Yum as the package manager. It'll align a bit better with AFJ. And I think it'll make that general setup a little bit better. So we do recognize there's some technical debt there, and we are going to make a concerted effort to come back and tidy that up so that, you know, if you are releasing this to a production environment, you've got some good unit tests to fall back on. You can make changes with a bit more comfort, and it's just generally a bit easier to set up and get going. So we'll be working on that. And the final thing I'll mention is OCA, and that is we've struggled a little bit to determine how we can brand this. So here in BC, we're going to support two languages. In Canada, we'll support two languages. We've got Quebec and Ontario and BC, three provinces rolling this out. And we want to support French in the wallet. So we need something like OCA to be able to determine how to display stuff. I mean, we can obviously do text in the wallet itself via the internationalization and localization, but how do you actually get a credential to display properly? And how do you get it to display with maybe a little bit of branding and other stuff? And you can package that up and own it as the credential issuer. We think OCA is the path forward. So you'll notice there's a pull request submitted by, I think, Quebec, who've done the most of the legwork on OCA. So we're kind of slowly integrating that. It's a bit of a learning experience for us, but we think that's the trajectory to go on. So those are my three work updates, I guess. And I got a couple of minutes here now if anybody's got questions or concerns.
Awesome. Any questions or concerns that anybody wants to ask on any three of those work updates from Jason?
I don't have any concerns, or I'm not sure if I have questions, but I do want to say that I did get a chance to try out the BCGov wallet. that was deployed, I guess, based on at least some of this work, and was able to get it working with some demo stuff that I was doing. So that was really satisfying to see, and congratulations on that. And I've been looking over the OCA specs and am looking forward to figuring out how to leverage OCA and particularly take advantage of multinational and the branding opportunities.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear that it worked with the demos and you've been able to dig into that. Jason, did you have a thought there?
Sorry, what was that, James?
I was mostly making a comment on Warren's comments there that he was able to get the BC wallet to work with his demos and what he's been able to do from the OCA perspective.
Yeah, that's exciting to hear. I'm glad it worked. It's still a bit glitchy in some areas, and we, you know, again, we recognize that. We went pretty hard on Agile, which is, you know, release early. Even if you're a little bit embarrassed about your first release, that's okay, because, you know, you can always clean it up. And here in BC, we've got a couple of pilots in flight, but we don't have a provincial-wide credential to be offered. That's what I'm working on actually right now, and it's going to be like, we call it the BC service card, but it's essentially a credential you can use to get access to things and especially services here in BC. And that'll be our first official one, which is still a couple of months out. So we have time to stabilize it before the general public get to use this. But yeah, I'm glad it worked. And thanks, Jose. It's good to hear that people are trying it and it's working. Back to you, James.
So if I could pose one question, I guess, is there a particular part of OCA? OCA is a fairly large, expansive set of optional capabilities. Any notion of what aspects of OCA are planning to be integrated?
I don't... I know the problems we want to solve, but I don't, like I said, a lot of this has been done by different team members, especially a group out in Quebec who are doing a wallet based on Bifold. Also, I know we want to just, you know, be able to display things. Like if you issue a credential, we might need to change the date format, for example, because our friends in the US and our friends up and here in Canada, we use slightly different formats. We often place the month in different places. So we want to be able to do that depending on where you are, to be able to display credential text in different languages. And of course, some branding, some look and feel to it. And I think they're working on some techniques to package it up. So The best person to talk to is probably Stephen Curran. He's got a demo set up where you can put a lot of this stuff into an Excel spreadsheet and then run some packaging mechanics, which will build your OCA bundle. And then you can either put that, I don't actually know where it goes, but then that'll be packaged up with the credential when it's issued. I think it'll be by a well-known URL or something. It'll grab the package. So I don't have a great answer for that, but Stephen would. Back to you, James.
Question I had, Jason, on the biometrics front was, we've been utilizing the updates to biometrics and PIN, and that's been working fairly well. One of the things that I believe is possible is to be able to upgrade from just PIN only to biometrics. Is that something, does that sound accurate to you, or is that not within the scope of what you have considered?
Yeah, so that's going to become we still need to work on the settings screen, and that's where you'd be able to toggle it on and off if you change your mind. Because once you onboard in the app, you're kind of stuck with your decision. So the idea would be you can use biometrics, fall back to PIN, and you can toggle it on and off in settings once we finally get that in there. So yeah, the upgrade would be doable, but it'll require the PIN to do the upgrade because like I introduced earlier, we're going to use the wallet wallet to verify that the PIN is correct. So you'll enter the PIN. It'll take the salt plus your PIN, create the hash, and then that hash is the key to unlock the wallet. So when you go to turn on biometrics, say you did it in settings, you'd probably need to re-enter the PIN so that it could regenerate the hash and then store it. There is Ontario, the other province here, doing that is a little bit, they don't love the idea of being able to upgrade it. And it has to do with a NIST standard on, I think, securing credentials. And you can't upgrade security. You can start with a certain high level. And I'll post this link in the chat. So if you want to read in the gory details of their specification, you can't upgrade security. You can downgrade it, which is easy. You can go from biometrics to PIN, but then you can't really upgrade according to the spec. I don't understand the details of it exactly. Again, a lot of this work was pioneered by Ontario, and we just did some of the under the hood implementation work. But yeah, it's a long, dry spec, and they've got some concerns about that. I don't think it would be such a big deal if you're doing a private sector wallet or anything such, but if you're part of a public body and you're trying to make secure, like go security first, just want to be, might be aware of the standard and how you're impacted when you downgrade security to the PIN and then you try to go back to biometrics and what that really means. And of course, we're struggling a little bit with determining whether you change fingers or not. Like, we want this wallet to be owned by the person who has the credentials in it. We don't want you to add your wife or your husband's finger so they can unlock your phone. And then, of course, you know, go in and unlock the wallet. So we're trying to determine, you know, work a little bit harder at determining when different pins, different biometrics are added or subtracted, and how the wallet can deal with that with respect to that NIST standard for securing credentials. So I'll post the links in the chat here, and hopefully that's a little bit more color to that subject. Back to you, James.
I appreciate the color. I do want to potentially express a little bit of concern about utilizing the Indie wallet to verify whether or not we can use that for authentication based off of the performance time of unlocking the Indie wallet, especially if we unlock it and then do a subsequent reopen it again in order to actually launch the agent, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so Timo had noted that there's a pull request in to separate a lot of the concerns of initializing the mediator, and that would include initializing the wallet. So I think he's subtracting starting communications with the mediator, and we were hoping to work on not unlocking, like when you fire up the wallet, you'll notice it opens a connection to each one of the ledgers. So we're hoping to pull that out again so that we can do a little bit more fine-grained control. We've noticed a bit of stability issues. Seems to be when it goes to sleep, if it's like it's backgrounded, if it's trying to communicate with the mediator or maybe even the ledgers. So we were hoping to be able to pause communication with the mediator when you put the app into the background and then bring it into the foreground. We could resume communications with the mediator. So we want to go that route, and we'll be mindful of the speed at which it can, you know, make the wallet usable. So hopefully those will address some of the issues by just having it focus on unlocking the wallet or not. What do you think, James? You think that'll work or maybe not?
I think it's worth I feel like you've got the right approach in mind, especially on the mediator front. I think one of my concerns is it can take 2 seconds or so to actually unlock the Indie SDK wallet, just booting up the wallet itself. In terms of the mediators, I thumbs up on that. In terms of the ledgers, those should be happening asynchronously, so that shouldn't be impacting the process. And I'm happy to talk more on GitHub and outside of this call if that's also helpful.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Jason, that's a good point. And I know the developers from Ontario has already raised that concern, and there is some potential idea to potentially add another API to, I don't know if it's just FJ or Indie SDK or VDI or whatever's coming, to do that key check without necessarily do the full initialization. That API doesn't exist yet. But I think once we get the flow working, we can improve and optimize that by adding some API like that.
Awesome. I think that could make sense to add it to either AFJ or somewhere in the lower stack as well. Adding it to the indie side, I am guessing is going to be challenging, but also that's definitely not insurmountable.
Yeah, I think there was some pushback from FJ because the solution was just like, well, just try initializing, but we do have some concern about the overhead of initializing.
Right. Awesome. Other questions or thoughts on the biometrics front? Wonderful. We had a couple of discussions here in the deployments and work updates. Specific to the React Native update to 0.7.0.1, I'd like to speak to that in the agenda more so. So we'll get to that at that point. On the agenda today, have topics for proof proposals. So specifically discussing thoughts around user flow with the proof requests between holders and verifiers. I wanted to speak to some of the React Native upgrade work that I and DCO have been working on. While not here, I'd like to have time for question and answer with the team. Is there anything else that we would like to add to the agenda to be discussed?
So the proof proposals, is that what the RFC is called, a credential negotiation?
I just didn't know necessarily what to call it, but this was a suggestion slash question that came out of Ian Co. About how to go about having the holder request information from organizations.
So it's the holder that is issuing a proof request from an issuer or verifier. Okay, not the same thing. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Let's jump into the agenda. If we want to add other things, I think that we'll have time to do so. On this first topic, just I already started speaking to it a little bit, but the question that Inco raised was, hey, is Bifold able to do verifications? So, or more specifically, request proofs from other agents. And currently, the answer is no. And primarily, the use case for being able to request that is to be in the verifier role, most of like a mobile verifier. You can think of something like you're going to, at a stadium, you're going to have a whole bunch of entrances, and each entrance, they're going to have a mobile wallet that they can then have holders scan and be able to present their ticket, for instance. The case that was brought up by Ian was, let's say I want to get I want to get proof that the restaurant has a valid operating license, that they've been inspected by the health department, right? One of the challenges of providing to the user is most often what we found works best is to have some pre-configured like list of proofs that you can make or proof requests you can make. And that can be kind of challenging, especially if you're gonna have your wallet be dynamic and be able to work with a variety of issuers and verifiers use cases. So the proposal that hadn't actually necessarily struck me was before was that the organizations could have a pre-set up presentation proposal that they send to the holder, and then the holder subsequently does a proof request based off of that, meaning that you don't have to have it be pre-configured, but you still actually give the option for the holder to be able to make a proof request and get this information, which I thought was actually a pretty clever idea. Questions on that initial topic?
Can you just say that last part again on the use case where what is it that the restaurant would provide so that I would be able to then generate a proof proposal? Say that again, please.
Yeah. So if the restaurant has like health, they've been checked by the health department and they have a credential that's certified that they've been checked. And they want to, the holder wants to be able to see that they've been checked. The holder would, the verifier would send a proposal, a proof proposal to the holder, and then the holder would make a proof request to be able to receive the proof of that credential. So it's a way of, the holder doesn't have to have this request already pre-identified and configured in the app because the verifier can have the details of the proof request on the organization side, if that makes sense.
I think that's something that has been raised before for us. How do we enable, again, residents to interact to each other by, say, proof that you're over 18 or proof whatever that you live here in the city and so on. The thing is, we haven't quite figured out how that user interface is going to be like, because we don't want it to be super complicated that the average user won't be able to do anything, because again, getting fields and creating a proof request is not necessarily a trivial thing. One thing that just crossed my mind is not necessarily the holder, the verifier or issuer, the verifier defining that. But if the user could provide some sort of, I don't know, OCA overlay of templates of proof requests that they suggest that would be useful for a holder. And this way they could then activate those templates to whatever verifier they want to interact with. So it'd be, for instance, if in your example, if someone gives you a health inspection certificate, it'd be then the health inspection authority providing some templates. Hey, here's how you use this credential. This is how you ask about this credential, like if you want to know this answers, and then they'll go and use those in the verifier point of view. But it would work only in a kind of very simple credential proof request. And if you get to things more complicated or getting multiple credentials, things can get very complicated very quickly.
Definitely. Good thoughts. Sam.
So this is along the lines of that. You can imagine the interface and the user strain to create their own proof request would be really painful. One of the things that I think would work not only in the restaurant case, but also person to person, might be definition of proof requests that are present in governance files. And what that means is that for any governance files that the phone knows about, presumably one or more, you could formulate a UI where there's like ready-made questions, if you will, that they can ask the other party that already have the defined, like what the proof request actually is. And so it can kind of indicate like, you know, there could be a quick description and the fields that are retrieved, et cetera. And then if the user selects that, it could then send the proof request. And then when the response comes back, then of course the same governance file can be useful in the verification of it, right? To validate the issuer of the credential, et cetera. And by doing so, you can sort of like pre-program stuff. It doesn't preclude any of the other methods that we've talked about, including yours, James. I think it's a useful mechanism to have within ecosystems sort of defined actions types of flows. And by flow, I mean that in a really weak sense in that, hey, here's the proof request that actually would make sense here. And that way the user can just select among already sort of programmed or available proof requests without really having to like have a complicated UI to define one. I think that the chances of a user correctly wanting to or successfully defining a proof request are zero or below. And so I think that providing them with already formed proof requests that make sense for an ecosystem, like, for example, if you happen to know you care about the health inspections of restaurants, that's a governance framework you can have available. And then it's pretty easy to, you know, ask an institution for that, for proof of that credential, and that makes it easy. So it sounds like, so Akif, you mentioned in the chat, like we've talked about this, it might be worth trying to throw together like an example UI, how we see that actually applying.
Yeah, I agree, because just as you were talking and I put down the comment there, I'm like, doesn't this fit into machine readable governance? It's something that we have talked about in the past, is outlining specific workflows that can be enabled through with specific credentials. So I wonder if it's now time for us to maybe start looking at prototyping this in the wallet and seeing like if we can try to enable it somehow, or at least try to test it out.
That sounds awesome. It would be helpful to have a use case to start this with, not just from the UI perspective, but like, you know, what the machine readable governance file would look like underneath that. Does anyone have like an on-fire use case that could really use this, or do we need to come up with an example one, like a verified email address or something? Any on-fire needs for this?
I suspect that there might be on-fire needs, but also a email, starting with an email would provide a generic thing to work off of, and that might allow the most people to contribute.
We've talked about doing an email thing in the past, but we've just never really made it past the idea stage there. And so that might be something we want to pursue in the Aries working group more broadly.
The other question I have, and maybe this is not related, is how does this fit into the context of action menus? I might be completely off here, but do they fit together or not?
That was actually one of my ideas that I had with, if the organization provides a proof proposal, they could do so of have a list in action menu of the proof proposals that they offer. I think that the machine readable governance gets us a lot, but I also, I think as Sam said, that doesn't discount the other methods, if that makes sense.
Yeah, we could try multiple different things and see where it ends up going. It's not like we're stuck to one mechanism or another. I just feel like we've talked about machine readable governance. We've seen it kind of working with the Cardia app. And so I think it might be time for it to at least put it in as a feature, and we can work on structure and as we go along. And we also have the option of OCA, which is another. So we have like three kind of really good options that I think we can test out.
Right. And I feel like one of the things, at least from my perspective, is we're already working on OCA that has a driving force behind it. And I think action menu, this would not be the only purpose of action menu. And machine readable governance has a lot of potential beyond just the proof requests here, like being able to verify that they're a valid verifier, a valid issuer, et cetera. among many other things. So I feel like making progress on machine readable governance would be a amazing step forward to start putting it in Bifold.
I have a question. Is there any spec or anything about machine readable governance at this point? Because I hear sometimes this kind of a silver bullet, machine readable governance will fix all of our problems. But
of course it will. there's the beginnings of that. Is it okay if I add a little bit of color there?
Please.
Yes.
So we, wearing my Indicio hat, the we Indicio have worked on machine readable governance to some effect, but we had to do so in a flaming hurry because of a client project. And so we did so recognizing that what we were doing was not done, but rather like an initial exploration to what it was like. So we've done that. We've deployed the concept. It works really well. At the last IAW, there was a whole bunch of interest in sort of getting together and talking about this. The outcome of that was a group that took on an additional work item in the Decentralized Identity Foundation to talk about that standardization concept. That effort is about to turn off out its first spec for a initial thing. There's a couple of problems actually wrapped up into it, and one of them is how you identify sort of players in an ecosystem. And so there's a general mechanism for sentiment assignment or sentiment expression, where you can say, I am saying the following things about the following did. And that's a useful thing when it comes to machine readable governance. That is the concept we've talked about it. It happens to be, I think this person is authorized to issue this schema is kind of how that shakes out in practice. There's other pieces that we're talking about there as well, and we're doing some cool stuff, including how you would, in addition to just listing participants in an ecosystem within that file, that you could designate or recognize participants in the ecosystem by the credentials they may have, or maybe presented alongside other credentials. These are issuer-related credentials in the supplement concept that we've been talking about in the main areas working group. So there's some progress there. The other thing is that in Twitter arguments with Daryl O'Donnell, Daryl and I have concluded that we actually don't disagree on very much between what we're doing and the trust over IP, but there's some fairly strong feelings about various architectural points. So Daryl and I have a call scheduled to briefly argue about this, with the outcome that we think it's possible to actually join those efforts in such that there wouldn't be two separate things from trust over IP and what the diff is working on, but rather sort of a joint thing that comes out of that. And so the work is going on, but it's all in kind of a rough stage. We have some stuff that we could share, so it is real, but the process of sort of community collaboration has resulted in it not like producing a done and polished document yet. And okay. That's my quick summary. Any questions I can answer or?
Nope, I think that's good. I'm just interested to see if there is any initial kind of a scope definition. Okay, what are the features? What is going to be supported? And I'm just seeing this blog post from Indicio. It makes sense. I'm just trying to figure out what are the features, what are things are going to be supported on this governance framework.
I can probably dig up a link, but I could probably say it faster than I can find the link. Do you want a quick summary?
I don't know if it's of the interest of this forum, but or you can email me directly. That's fine.
I'm happy either way.
James, I feel like
the time.
I feel like we. I want to hear it, Sam. I think it's useful.
Me too.
There you go.
Okay. Bring it on. So. There's lots of things that we've imagined are possible. The initial scope that we think is logical is to identify the issuers of schemas, and there can be more than one schema identified in an ecosystem, of course, and then which issuers are authorized to issue which credentials based on which schema. A natural follow-on to that is approved verifiers. This is, in some contexts, like doesn't make a lot of sense. In some contexts, it does. If you have more sensitive credentials, then pre-identifying and saying, hey, this governance framework thinks that this is a useful verifier for this credential, so that's an opinion that we can advise the user on, then approved verifiers also make sense. And that's also a schema thing, in the sense that there's a schema that the verifier is sort of approved to ask about. And that's actually, that schema thing is the piece that would be useful in the mobile app asking for someone else to say, hey, like, what can we do there, right? And then, of course, there's two ways that participants are identified. One is directly by like DID in a document. Again, these are like public parties, so like peer DIDs don't really end up here. Or, and here's where peer DIDs can enter in. You can discover that someone is an authorized issuer or verifier because they're able to present a credential of some type that's also identified within the governance framework itself. There's a little bit of recursive usefulness in the definition that we've been working with so far. And so that's kind of the scope. Schemas, issuers, and verifiers with a method for delegation, in the sense that let's say I help a friend out with a movie festival or something. They can issue me a credential that says I'm a valid ticket taker, even though I'm an individual. And then standing at the door, I can present proof to the people giving me their ticket that I am authorized to receive their ticket presentation. And that could actually be checked because I can present a credential even though I'm not explicitly named. So that's kind of the initial scope of that. There's other things that we've imagined, like what workflows would be. This is interaction documents that Keith Smith brought up like forever ago, and some other cool things there. But we feel like we should start with the issue, the schemas, the issuers, and verifiers as part of that.
I have one question that I understand probably not going to be in the scope right away, but have you considered going as far as the schema attribute? One of the things that we talk about, and maybe we don't want a verifier asking for people's pictures because they can use a photo ID or that photo element without some guidance around it. So potentially we may be enable them, the holders, to have it, but not necessarily all verifiers should be allowed to ask for that element.
So that would be handled in the schema for verification, which does not have to match the schema for issuance, in the sense that you might issue something with 10 credentials, but the verification only says, hey, there's only three that we really think you should probably verify for this party.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
I also have there, this is super rough, so please be gentle with your comments, but the concepts are expressed in the link I just put in the chat, where it kind of lists schemas, participants, and roles. This is a little bit of a working document, so it's not precise, but this is the closest thing that I can give you that relates to the discussions we've been having recently in the DIF working group there. So you can see that the participants are listed, and there's like a lab licensing board and a health lab here. There are roles assigned, as well as like sort of descriptive schemas like label, sublabel, website, email. And then there's a roles thing down below, which indicates that roles can be gained by the presentation of a credential rather than being named in the participants entries list. And then the roles up above in the schemas list indicate who are valid issuers. Not yet present there is who are valid verifiers of that schema. But that's an easy thing to add. We just didn't get there yet. We're trying to get past the issuer stage before we reapply the same stuff to verifiers. But we've sort of thought about that and designed and named things so that it would be easy to add in. And so this is an example of that. We feel like this is a pretty concise way of expressing this that's useful and isn't insane to parse or to process, but does the sort of the minimum required information to like make a trust decision like this.
Lance.
Forgive me if I missed it, but is there a working group?
There is at the DIF. It's a work item of the claims and credentials working group, I believe, at the DIF.
Okay. Thank you.
If you'd like to get involved, like ping me privately and I'll see if I can get you on whatever counter invite. I'm not in charge of that. I'm just an attendee. But yeah, so there's definitely a work item talking about this. This is also likely going to become a large discussion item at IAW.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Awesome. So Sam, given the current state of where you guys are at, what do you think makes sense for us from the bifold perspective to do to attempt to implement or start some kind of process here?
That's a good question. And the best answer is a time machine, but given the rollout process of that, so this is squishy, right? And I want to clarify that this is like totally my opinion and everyone's probably got a better one. I think it's probably worth getting started on something, even if it's not the final thing, to gain experience with what the UI or how it might affect the programming and everything else. That example that I shared, whatever we end up deciding on, it's going to be something of that, like it's going to have the same information, even if the schema is different or it's organized slightly differently. It's going to be approximately that, which means that if you recognize and mark the feature, it's either developed in a feature branch or something else, and you recognize that it's like it's got, you know, the ground is moving underneath it, I think that you could make a lot of progress that would not really need to be refactored very much in sort of a final output of this. And so this could definitely be used to experiment with what the UX could look like or how a user might select from these things to make it happen. And so I think that is probably the right place to explore. We're working as fast as we can to try and get stuff nailed down. And so you always want it to happen faster than it does. But in my opinion, you could, from a UX perspective, specifically, a lot of progress could be made without having the final format ready. Kind of depends on how urgently folks want it. If you're not urgently wanting this yet, then obviously wait and see how far we get by the time you do urgently need it. But yeah, that's super squishy answer, James. But hopefully something I said was useful to somebody.
No, I actually really like your thought process in that we shouldn't wait necessarily until it's got its full on stamp of approval. Like this is the rough format and we should experiment and work with it, especially because some of the things that we identify might provide feedback that would be applicable to the group in actually who's creating the format. So I think experimenting is useful.
We'd be super grateful for any feedback that folks realize, whether it's UI based or not, in the process.
So I think that I think defining a email governance, something generic, would be useful to start working on it. Or if someone wants to run with one of their own use cases as well, I think that would be also good. Lance.
So just looking at the diff calendar, I see the claims and credentials working group has a bi-weekly, and then there's a claims and credentials working group data agreement.
It's called trust establishment, I think.
Okay, trust establishment. Okay, thanks.
Awesome. That was a really good discussion on machine-readable governance. Just make sure I'm on the same page. Sam, are we looking to have discussion in the Aries working group to do an email governance, or is that something that should be pursued outside of that context?
We probably should. I should talk to the guy who runs those meetings and we'll see if we can get on the agenda. I groan not because of any other reason, that just I've like tried to do this before and have failed to thoroughly follow up myself. So this is commentary only on yours truly, not on anyone else.
Lance.
My bad. That was old.
Oh. No worries. Wonderful. That was a really good topic. Any other last thoughts or questions on this agenda item? Wonderful. Next on the list, I wanted to speak to the React Native update that Indicio has been working on. We've made a lot of headway, but we've also run into some challenges. One of those challenges has already been addressed. Some of the recent iOS updates, including to Xcode, meant that we ended up moving to update to 0.70.1 instead of just 0.69.5. So that's nice. The issue that we're currently, we've at this point squashed multiple bugs related to React Native Vision Camera. Because for context, we've had to swap out the camera dependency because it was deprecated and no longer works in this version of React Native. So part of why I bring it up is that we're thinking we might try and look for alternatives to React Native Vision Camera based off of its performance and polish and consistency. If there are recommendations to look at that would be worthwhile, one of the ones we're considering is the Expo scanning, what's that called? Code scanner, barcode scanner. are there other recommendations for what we might look at on that front?
I haven't looked at it, so I would say run with it.
Okay. What I'll probably do, though, Akif, especially just to touch base with you on that, is I think I'll open up a draft PR, recognizing that we need to do some additional updates to the camera, just so that you're aware of where that's at, and try and help unblock anything you need on that front.
Yeah, so long as it can read the QR code, I think the logic to parse it and to extract the information is probably separate. So yeah, I think you should be able to change it without too much effort, I think.
Right. Awesome. Any questions on this process here? I guess the other thing I'll mention, because it's somewhat relevant, is one of the updates that I made as part of this was to improve the installation process for NDSDK React Native for iOS, because this has been kind of a pain point here. And this is currently held up after some discussion. And I think the thought process is I'm going to be looking to reach out to Rai and other potentially other avenues with Hyperledger to see if we can resolve some of the build locations and be able to get that resolved so we can push this PR forward.
Hey, James, have you guys ever considered a VM development environment for these kinds of things? We find that new developers coming up to speed, with React Native and the multiple environments and, you got to install Indy and, we have our own SDKs that we're also working with. It's like a nightmare to get somebody going and then they just have a different environment. They're on Windows, I'm on Mac, and my Mac's an M1, and it's brutal. So we've started to consider, can we just have a boxed up development environment that they can work from and deploy our services. And so I don't know if anybody else, you know, in the Aries or indie community have thought about that stuff, but I'm interested.
I think it could definitely provide value. And I think I've seen a Dockerized setup for React Native once or twice, but I know that has not made it high enough my priority list, but like, I think it's also very useful. And especially the further we get with adoption and usage of our libraries, the more impactful and useful that gets. So that's my thoughts, at least. Is there things that people know of or interest also in doing, helping make this a reality?
And I forgot who asked that question. Is that specifically for running your dev environment?
Yeah, I mean, just setting up a dev environment for a React Native app with its, you know, various versions of Java and Node, and it depends on what environment you've got going. And
yeah, I did take a quick look. The problem is that it does rely some of the, it depends how far you want to go. We can set it up, but it does, it ultimately depends on Xcode and Android SDK that needs to be running. And some of the stuff we apparently need kind of a native installation of it. There's some hacks around Android, but I have no idea about iOS development. But we can containerize some of those work, the React Native part of it. But when it comes to running and the building and running of the React Native environment themselves, they rely on the native Xcode and Android SDK stuff. But if somebody's interested in figuring that out, that I'm interested. I've tried to go into the same path because I found it was very complicated and somewhat fragile. but I couldn't figure it out.
I think that's actually a very good point, is that Xcode, based on the requirement for Xcode, you would need to have a Mac VM of sorts, and so that gets into some problematic territory.
Yeah, that's where I got stuck. I can VM all the dependency, that's just like no dependencies, which is not that bad. It's trivial. But when it comes to setting up the Android SDK properly and all the bits and pieces and Xcode, that's where I start to have issues.
So I think my response to the question here, Lance, is I think we'd love to, but so far we've run into issues in doing so. So if we can find solutions or be, if someone has answers, then I think we're more than happy to help make it go further and better.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, it's not easy. I have worked in a world where, everybody was, you know, working off the same kind of dev image, and then, you know, you're pulling stuff from Git and everything, and still it's complicated. So, you know, it's not even a silver bullet by itself. But maybe people aren't experiencing as much difficulty getting, you know, new developers spun up as I am either. I mean, it could just be
A lack of documentation for us. So if you have any questions and as maybe help us get our documentation better.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, I'm not necessarily criticizing like Bifold specifically. And in fact, you know, the Aries JavaScript documentation, has already become super helpful for us. I'm thinking more generally of just React Native development of wallets and the surrounding ecosystem that you know we might have with it, and You know, for instance, let's take the Ares test harness. You know, I haven't, you know, set that up yet or any of those things, but certainly it would be nice if I had like this environment essentially where I can kind of launch the different services more easily, I guess. But I was just wondering if you know, maybe that already existed out there, and any thoughts. So it's good.
There's a GitHub code space, but I don't know if they support mobile development. Okay, good. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
The one other comment I'll have, Lance, is that I think the number one issue that I've run into with people and my team and whatnot is the Indie SDK installation on the device, so you can do development in AFJ. Not necessarily for lack of documentation, but invariably something goes wrong in that process that ends up, and it's different each time. And that's where I've run into the most issues. And that I think might be able to be dockerized, and that seems more feasible to me to tackle from than a React Native perspective. But this is not that call, so.
Yeah, fair.
Good question and topic, Lance. With that brings us to Q&A with maintainers, and then any PR review and GitHub issues if we would like to. Any questions anybody else has that they'd like to raise? I realize we're actually this close to the time. That's actually a really good timing. Wonderful. I think that this has been some wonderful discussion and topics today. Thank you everybody for coming and lending your brain power. And I'm very excited about where Bifold's going, and let's keep up the good work. Thank you, everybody, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Yeah, super stuff. Thanks, James.
Thank you.
Thank you.